Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Horror in the Court. On the docket today, it's Troll versus Troll in the case of Troll v. Smiley. Please be warned, there are spoilers ahead. Now please rise for the Honorable Judge Darren Ewing.
Hello, I'm the Honorable Judge Darren Ewing. I'll be presiding over this, the first Horror in the Court. And we have two films here that are going to be defended by two representative lawyers. On one side of the argument is Jeremiah Johnson, who will be defending the 1986 film by John Carl Beekler called Troll. And on the other side of the court is Scott Baer, who will be defending the film Smiley from 2012. The theme residing in this Horror in the Court will be the theme of trolls. Troll is obviously, there is a troll in the movie Troll, and in the movie Smiley, which came out, I already said 2012, there's an internet troll. So it's Troll versus Troll. And let's dig into our arguments. I understand, Jeremiah Johnson, you will be speaking first.
Correct. I'm going to be talking on behalf of 1986's Troll. And first of all, let me extend my thanks and welcome to Your Honor, Judge Ewing, and of course, my colleague Scott Baer here. Thank you to everyone listening today to our arguments regarding the relevance and the menace of trolls of both the 21st century and ancient legend varieties. Now, today I will be presenting arguments on behalf of 1986's Troll, as mentioned, proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the trolls of fairy tales and ancient legend are in fact more menacing and to this day retain their relevance beyond that of Scott's client, 2012 Smiley. Now, Mr. Baer is going to tell you a lot of scary things. He's going to try and convince you that because internet trolls exist in reality, they must prove to be more menacing. Because internet trolls are utilizing the most relevant form of communication today, they themselves must be relevant. I will prove otherwise through careful discussion and evidence. I'm going to show you that reality doesn't immediately equal fear. After all, it's the things that lurk in our imagination. It's the monsters under our bed and the scratches at our window after the lights go out that terrify us from as early as our minds are developed until the day we die. And that everyday potential for fear, not knowing when something's going to grab your ankle when you hop in bed at night, that's relevance. That's something that has burrowed into your subconscious and is present at every turn. That is relevance. If Mr. Baer wants to argue the menace of Smiley through reality, well, let's talk reality for a second. Internet trolls, to this day, are loser basement dwellers living with their moms who hide behind a veil of anonymity to yell on YouTube trying to turn a cat video into a racist rant against the president. Internet trolls might, at best, raid your iCloud account and post some of your nude selfies on 4chan. In reality, Scott's trolls are as imaginary as any fairy tale I've ever heard, and not nearly as scary. Smiley's projecting a fictional fear onto reality, like any good fearmonger or irrational media hype is wont to do. Smiley's troll live in reality inside your computer. So, shut off your computer. The troll is dead. My trolls? They live in the dark nooks and crannies of your mind. So go ahead, try and shut off your mind. That troll is immortal. That troll is relevant. That troll is menacing. Thank you.
Very well. Now then, Scott Baer, your arguments for the film Smiley.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Judge Ewing, and to my esteemed colleague, Jeremiah. We are here tonight to prove in the 21st century which troll is both more menacing and more relevant, the mythical trolls of fairy tales and horror movies, or the internet trolls that surround us invisibly in everyday life, like sneaky Canadians infiltrating our borders and stealing our jobs. Jeremiah will try to sway the court to believe that his client, 1986's Troll, is both a classic and a true tale of terror filmed with diminutive monsters from the corners of children's imaginations and nightmares. He will tell you tales of horror and warnings of the end of life as we know it, as the trolls from his film try so hard but ultimately fail to take over the world. He will try to scare the court into seeing his side of things, but in reality he will surely fail. The horror that Troll represents has changed. It's evolved. Today's children and their older, more feeble parents have something new to fear, internet trolls. My client, 2012's film Smiley, is a compelling tale of the dangers of the internet and the treachery of the trolls that now live there. Anyone could be an internet troll. Your son, your sister, your dad, your best friend. They live among us, striking fear into the world with each keystroke. Smiley deftly introduces us to the darkest timeline version of internet trolls. People who manipulate others, play sadistic games with other people's fears, and ultimately with their lives. True terror does not have sharp teeth and hairy feet. True trolls have evolved and are born from our own technology and our own insecurities and fears. The evidence I will present will prove my client Smiley to be the superior troll film, in both scary scenarios that could play out in real life and the cultural relevance that Jeremiah's film fails to deliver. When I go to sleep, it's what lurks on my laptop that keeps the covers pulled tight, not what lurks under my bed. To quote Albert Einstein, it has been appallingly obvious that technology has exceeded our humanity. And quoting National Treasure Betty White, trolls suck. If that's not an indictment on internet trolls and the evil that they nurture, then I do not know what is. Thank you.
Thank you. Two very compelling arguments.
And now I would like to open up the floor to an open debate, of which I will be allowing myself to interfere. And, well, gentlemen, you've made two very compelling cases. I have to say that Scott invoking the name Betty White definitely gives him an edge so far in this argument. But, gentlemen, I leave it to you to cross-examine one another.
All right, so allow me, this is Jeremiah, to kind of introduce the troll movie before we get into a full-fledged open discussion or argument or whatever it is, whatever fiery kind of discussion we get into. You know, a couple of little bullet points. That it was released January 17th, 1986, so right at the top of 1986, the 80s. We all grew up in the 80s. We all did the 80s thing. IMDb rating, 4.2. This is out of 10, mind you, okay, IMDb style. Rotten Tomatoes rating, 29%, but that is only based on 7 reviews. I'm saying that because I'm guessing if it got more reviews, it actually might be lower. I was surprised by 29%. Director, as Judge Ewing mentioned at the top, is John Carl Beekler. He is actually an effects master turned director. I believe from what I read, he, and this is kind of an interesting tidbit that I kind of question is its validity, but because it's hard to find out where this came from. But the apparently he was the first like special effects master, primarily special effects person to ever step into the director's chair. Other people have done it since, actually.
He did a physical effect. Is that correct?
Yeah, he did. Yep. He was a practical effects guy. He did it for a ton of movies right before this one. He was kind of an effects master. He did the practical effects for this film as well, for the first role. Mm-hmm. Some of his related work, Friday the 13th Part 7, he also directed. That was after the first Troll movie. And some notable stars, and here's the thing, when I was doing some research on this, it was nice to see the attachments from this movie, which I grew up on. I probably watched this when I was 7 or 8 years old, the first Troll movie. And seeing these attachments to all these classic movies that I really loved. First of all, it starred Noah Hathaway, who played the main kid character, the male kid character. He's best known as Atreyu from The Neverending Story, which was one of my favorite movies growing up as well.
May I interject?
Of course, yeah.
What is
I'll allow it.
there you are. Yeah, it's not my place to say.
What was the kid character's name in this movie? I'm curious.
Oh, you're not curious. You're setting it up.
I totally am setting it up.
Absolutely. Okay, let me jump to one little piece of trivia. This film contains the original Harry Potter. This is the father is Harry Potter, and the son, which is Atreyu, Noah Hathaway, Harry Potter Jr., is one of the main characters. Now, this predated J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter, which we're, of course, all familiar by 11 years. Now, the filmmakers originally considered suing J.K. Rowling over the use of the character, but apparently a family tragedy in the life of Troll's owner pushed the suit to the back burner, so it never actually happened. So, nice setup, very good. But this Harry Potter Jr. was Atreyu's. I called him Atreyu the whole movie when I found out he was Atreyu. I couldn't, like, every time he would do something, I just couldn't help but shout, Atreyu! But that's just me. I shout Atreyu randomly in the street.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's like some. It's just what I say when I'm angry at people. Oh, Atreyu!
Atreyu!
Falcor! I should do it. It would be great to do, like, a mashup. Do a troll... Never-ending story mashup sometime.
Oh,
someday.
Yeah.
We'll do that. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her first film debut. She, of course, Seinfeld fame. She plays Jeanette Cooper in this. She is, of course, best known for Elaine.
And you see her rear end in the film. It's terrific.
You do. There's that one scene where she runs. Yes. And I swear, there's nothing down there.
Yeah.
She's a wood nymph, isn't she?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, she gets transformed in the wood nymph. I feel like... For those out there not as familiar with the movie, you know, the kind of basic synopsis is the Potter family, the Harry Potter family, moves into their new San Francisco apartment. Daughter Wendy gets attacked by a troll when the family's unpacking. No, there's no real explanation of why the troll is down in that particular San Francisco apartment's basement. In fact, they even bring up, like, why is he here? And they just pass by it being like, I don't know. But
yeah, it's just San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because sometimes you buy a place with a troll in it, sometimes you don't. You never know. So, but you should be, if it's rent controlled, man, take it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, you got to get it. Hey, and I don't want to get ahead of you, Jeremiah, but I don't know if you're going to get to the fact that Julia Louis-Dreyfus's husband, Brad Hall, is also in this film. And this is before they were married, and I think it's before they were working together on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, you know, I didn't even bump up against that piece of trivia. So you did.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm glad you chimed in on that one.
Brad Hall's the lucky guy that got to marry her.
Yeah. Who did he play in the movie?
He played William Daniels.
Hmm.
I just know that off the top of my head.
Okay.
Oh, and the fact that it's on the screen right here.
Okay, good. That's very good.
I'm totally cheating.
I'm cheating with both. I took some, you know, notes and got some research and got, you know, we've all got our IMDBs up here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's with the troll, you know, kind of takes over Wendy's form. We find out later that she's actually being stored kind of in a Snow White style in the troll universe that we'll discuss in a little bit. And she's going to eventually become the princess of the trolls when the trolls have completed their universe in this apartment. They're pretty much going around apartment by apartment, kind of turning each apartment into like its own little troll fairy tale land that are all going to join up into this bigger universe that then is gonna, when it's all said and done, kind of escape out into the real people universe and create kind of its own fourth dimension and, you know, possibly consume the reality of the human universe, et cetera, et cetera. So it's interesting, because it's also the third person I was gonna mention that's in this, I mean, there are other people, plenty of other people, but of good note here, Sonny Bono plays Peter Dickinson, which is an upstairs neighbor, and he's like a ladies' man, and he's actually one of the most hilarious parts of this movie.
Objection?
Yeah.
In my notes, I listed him as drunk misogynist.
Hmm. Sustained.
Okay. So from now on, I will... Okay, so my references to Sonny from now on have to be as drunk misogynist.
Because I believe the second...
Well, wait a minute. Now, according, I see him playing Peter Dickinson.
That's correct. Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
but he's a drunk misogynist.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not a ladies' man from now on. I guess he's a drunk misogynist.
Well, my evidence for that bit of
is that he was a drunk misogynist.
was that he was. The second time we see him in the movie, he is clearly having a next morning hungover session talking to the girl he was with the night before.
Right. Yeah.
As she is dressing in her scantily clad cocktail dress type thing. And I believe he asks her if she wants to stay for breakfast and then tells her where the pancake mix is.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. That is very misogynist.
Very. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And doesn't he get turned into a bush or something like that?
He gets. Yeah, that's the thing with him. This is good. It ties into Julia Louis-Dreyfus's fate. His fate, he got turned into like a pea pod thing.
Yep.
It gets split open and a bunch of little baby like weird creatures and trolls pop out.
Those were the peas.
And it's actually, I find that scene absolutely horrifying. I don't know why.
It's
just a terrifying scene to me.
That was the scene I remember the clearest from when I was a kid watching it.
And because then it's when like some of the cute trolls are coming out, and they're not even all trolls. They're just various like creatures, and that's the thing. So he gets turned into this this peapod that gets split open and all these things come out, and then Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character is like, you're the same, only you're like a horned up wood nymph now.
Yeah.
And you've got some leaves covering you. That's her fate. That's so much
strategic
better.
Strategic leaves.
yes. I've had some experience with trolls and strategic leaves.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, you have.
I'll allow that.
That's correct. I thought it was interesting. I think it was that scene when all the weird creatures and stuff split out of Sonny Bono. There is one of them is like a baby Gillman, you know, Gillman from the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes.
One of them is actually one of those. It's not even like you look closely. It's just when I think when I saw the movie, I probably wasn't as aware of Creature of the Black Lagoon as I was the troll movie. So I saw that. I'm like, that's got to be it. So I paused it. And sure enough, that was it. It has to be. I'm sure it was an homage from the director and slash, you know, he was also the effects guy. So
now you mentioned that that it's a pea pod that he turns
it's
into.
It's a pod. It's not a pea pod. It's a troll pod, right?
Well, I mean, it's like peas in a pod. Like several come out. It's a pod. It has various fruit.
Right.
It's a pea pod.
It looks like a pea pod. Yeah.
Now it's interesting is the troll when it becomes the young girl in the movie early on. The only line it says for like the entire first half of the movie is pea porridge.
Oh, yeah, that's
it
right.
It repeats that little pea porridge ditty.
It's like a little jingle, yeah.
Yeah, but I thought that was kind of interesting that it very much resembled a pea pod, and the only thing it says at the beginning is pea porridge.
Right.
I don't think there's much there, but I just thought it was interesting.
Mm. Yeah. I wanted to also mention, and again, if I'm getting ahead of you, I'm the judge. I guess
yeah,
I can
you can do
whatever
you want, man.
No,
Your
but
Honor.
some other notable appearances in the film, and I don't know if you're going to get to this, but Gary Sandy from WKRP in Cincinnati. I'm much older than you two, so I remember WKRP in Cincinnati on TV, and Gary Sandy is from that show. But the one that I love is that June Lockhart is in this film,
right?
From Lost in Space, and I just adore June Lockhart. So you know, Sonny Bono gets a lot of play, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, but June Lockhart and Academy Award winner Michael Moriarty are also in this film.
Oh, and Michael Moriarty's awesome. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. As he always is. Except that if you've seen It's Alive 3. It's the movie that makes Troll 2 feel good about itself. And I think Moriarty is drunk through the entire film. So
okay,
a little suggestion.
That's going to make a list. And I guess we could put that as one of our, you know, something for those listeners out there to go check out as well. You know, a suggestion by your judge Hewitt.
Yes. It's Alive 3, Giant Killer Babies. That's all I'll say.
I actually remember watching that as a kid. I don't
it
remember
sounds
clearly
familiar,
anymore.
But I don't know. It's Alive. I don't know. It's Alive 3.
I think I watched all of them as a kid. They were in the
I remember It's
remember
Alive.
The old VH stores, VHS rental stores.
Oh yeah, back in the day.
That's where I saw it.
Yeah, back when you used to peruse the movies by looking at the cases and looking at the art and being like, that looks scary.
That's how I came across both troll movies. Yeah,
and I would always actually I have the DVD right here. I'm holding it in my hand. Troll and Troll 2, the double feature. The one thing that's interesting is for years and years, people had asked me if I watched Troll, if I had seen Troll. And the first time I ever saw Troll was in 2007 at the Troll 2 Festival in Morgan, Utah, where it was projected on a giant outdoor inflatable screen. And that's literally the first time I ever saw the movie Troll was... during that weekend, that if you watch Best Worst Movie, that they showed Troll at that event at the end of the film.
That was what 17 years, I guess, ish after the after Troll 2 was even recorded, right?
Yeah. And people always ask because they always say, "Well, is Troll 2 a sequel to Troll?" And of course, it isn't.
It is not at all.
No, Troll 2 was originally called Goblin. And how it came to be known as Troll 2, I can only guess that some marketing company decided that there was a better money to be made in a sequel, so they just called it that. But the two are not related at all.
And actually, I wonder if that's something relatively common with, you know, like those overseas European Italian type movies, because I like one of my favorite classic horror movies is called Zombie 2, Zombi 2. And it's like the Lucio Fulci classic movie. And apparently the reason they called it Zombie 2, there was never Zombie 1, over here, it's just called Zombie 2, and they actually changed the name, I think, to Zombie in the United States eventually. The reason they did that is because Night of the Living Dead, the name of that movie in Italy was Zombie. So they actually kind of marketed this, the second movie, by a completely different director as a sequel by putting the 2 out after it, kind of like Troll 2, similarly like that. And actually, Troll 3 was kind of the same way, where it was like, that one didn't even have goblins. It was even farther off. It was like originally called like Crawlers or something like
that. Yeah, it has several titles.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Crawlers was filmed simultaneously with Troll 2.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Filmed at the exact same time, two different production companies, two scripts. And in fact, my friend Patrick Michael Collins is in Crawlers, a.k.a. Troll 3.
Right. And I guess while we're on the topic of, you know, you brought up June Lockhart. Now, you're talking, June Lockhart was Eunice, the older...
Yes.
Lockhart. I say that with a question mark because she turns young in the movie, and that's actually June Lockhart's daughter,
right,
who plays the young version of her, Anne Lockhart. Mm-hmm. And I did look up June Lockhart's credentials, and they go back all the way back to 1938. She's been in just all of these classic shows and everything like that. And actually, she was one of my favorite characters. She actually has one of my favorite lines, which, you know, where I'm actually going to pause for a second and play a clip right now.
Come in, Harry.
Hi, Eunice.
Hello.
How'd you know it was me?
Oh, I recognize the knock. It's prepubescent.
So that was one of my favorite lines, and it kind of brings, like we were talking about the character development, I guess, actually not really, but that's, I feel like she was one of the strongest characters and strongest actors in there. I feel like one of my other favorites, and this is, again, going back to the attachment to these classic kids movies that I fell in love with, the actor, I think, probably pronounced differently, but Phil Fondacaro, he actually played the troll, Turok the troll, and Malcolm Mallory, who was one of the tenants that the daughter, Wendy, actually in troll form, really the troll, befriends this character. Mm. So he played both of those, and a couple of fun tidbits about him is he played an Ewok in Return of the Jedi. He's the only Ewok to have a death scene, and he later appeared with fellow Jedi actor, fellow Ewok, Warwick Davis, in Willow. And with Willow, of course, and Return of the Jedi are two of my favorites. So Phil Fondacaro, the little guy who Wendy thinks is an elf, or rather troll Wendy thinks is an elf. And I think that actually a really cool part of this, of the troll movie too, was, you know, Turok the troll was definitely like this bad guy for the most part. But there was a little bit of a soft side there where you could remember, if you recall, he finds out that the elf,
that is so not PC. Objection. I'd like to call an objection on Jeremiah not being PC enough in the court.
Objection overruled.
Okay, thank you. Because in the film, if you recall, she considers him an elf, okay? Not my words. Wendy from Trolls words. There are quotes around this, okay? As the quote-unquote elf.
Yes, these air quotes work very well in a podcast, Jared.
Yes.
We'll put like a little bell or something every time I'm air quoting.
You can object to air quotes.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. That's a good...
And by the way, I just want to go back a little bit earlier and mention that Ewok Death Scene is a good band name. Okay, continue.
Wow, you're right.
I want to allow that, and I don't even get a say.
agreed, absolutely.
Yes.
So, you know, there's the attachments to my characters and stuff like that. But you find that the troll has this soft side by finding out that Phil Fondacaro's character, Malcolm, has this, it seems like a kind of cancer or something, and he's going to pass away soon. She gets really sad about that, and she's like, well, what if I could make you, you know, live in a different body? And, of course, he doesn't realize, like, oh, it means she's probably going to make me a little troll weird elfy fairy tale
right,
thing, but
exactly.
Of course that's what happens. He emerges from a pea pod and there he is, safe and sound.
Now you were talking about I forget the character's name, the main witch, the one who takes
Eunice.
Harry Potter under wing.
Eunice. Former princess.
Now, did you notice that Eunice in her apartment had a painting, and it was of Turok as a man?
Yes,
as a human man, and she was in it as well, younger self. Mm-hmm. I think it was a portrayal of her daughter. There was a troll in the painting in one scene. Did you happen to notice what it looked like? And no. This kind of blew me away. I had to pause the movie to get a clearer look.
I didn't.
The picture of the troll in the painting that's kind of like behind them as like a foreboding image looks exactly like the green baby style ghoulie from the movie Ghoulies.
Oh, yeah.
The one that's sticking out of the toilet on the cover of the VHS tape.
Phil Fondacaro is also in Ghoulies.
Oh, I wonder how, that connection is definitely there.
And actually, I'm wondering if maybe even John Carl Beekler did like some ghoulie pieces. Because apparently in one of Atreyu's walls when he's Harry Potter Jr. I'm sorry, Atreyu is just way cooler. But on one of Harry Potter Jr.'s walls, I guess in the background, one of the posters is from John Carl Beekler's first movie that he actually directed a piece of, which was called Rage War, which I watched some of, because you can find it on YouTube, like a VHS rip. It is freaking awesome. It came out in 84. There's this random scene, because it's about like a dungeon, it's also called Dungeon Master, like a Dungeons and Dragons thing where this nerd with this intelligent computer, which would be stupid by today's days, but it's just a super intelligent computer, goes and has to like battle this Dungeon Master thing and to win his girlfriend back. And you just like randomly, he's playing like metal music and like the Dungeon Master's like, oh man, so you want to, you like this heavy metal music so much. Well, here's plenty of it. And then they just randomly get to a Wasp concert. It's like,
oh,
it's
I've
awesome.
Seen this.
Really?
Yes.
So there's just this random reason. They're just like, clearly they could get Wasp for this movie. And they're like, well, Wasp is big. Let's toss
I
them.
Remember that.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was from 1984. He filmed like, it was, one of those 3-part movies where 3 directors did 3 things kind of themed. And
yes.
I haven't watched it all.
Did you
for
did you
years my friends got together and we have a bad movie night and we did this for years and years and that I remember that now.
Okay,
vividly.
Yeah, yes. that's the part that because it was kind of fading in the background when I was watching it. It was a really terrible like VHS rip on YouTube, but I was getting the gist of it. And of course then it was just such an obligatory, like, a way to throw yes. Wasp into it. Like, they're big in 1984. We could get him for this movie. Boom. You're at a Wasp concert. Oh,
suddenly
so
blind in Texas.
I loved it. Yeah.
Now, did you also notice the other movie poster on his wall? Piranha 3D. Yeah, there's no
awesome.
Connection at all, but that was the other movie poster on his wall. The kid loved horror movies.
Okay.
All yeah, right. Harry Potter was into Dungeon Master and Piranha 3D. Hmm. And if you look less closely, you'll also notice that he sleeps in what appears to be a girl's twin bed, which I didn't really understand.
Hmm.
Did you notice it was all pink linens with like white rails?
Well, they just moved in.
Yeah, it looked like they set up the set for his sister's room, but then had to use it for his room.
Yeah, it could be.
Although
yeah.
they did sleep in the same room in that one scene where the troll was in the bed, her bed.
Right. Oh.
And kept like creepily looking at him while he was trying to sleep.
Hmm.
All right.
I had a pink bedroom.
Oh, you did? Okay. So it's natural.
So now, yeah, now you've got... No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was
I
just an 80s thing, man.
No. I had a Star Wars bedroom.
Yeah, I didn't get any of that cool
which isn't
stuff.
Any cooler, by the way, but...
Well, I mean, it's, I guess, a little more fitting for, like, a young
80s
kid.
Boy.
Yeah, you know, Darren's like, no, I mean, I still have a freaking Star Wars bedroom today.
No, yes, I still do. My yeah. wife is thrilled with it.
Yeah. Oh, man. I sleep in an X-Wing. That's what I...
Wow. That's got to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's not ergonomic whatsoever.
Yeah.
I've got terrible back problems, but it's worth it because I get to sleep in a Star Wars bed. Man.
Use the Force to help you to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also called Benadryl. That's it. more of the Force, Mom. More Force. One thing, I guess a remake of this original Troll movie has been in the works for a while. I don't know if any of you guys have read that, but John Carlo Beekler is going to produce it, I guess. He wanted to direct it, but he's working on a conflicting big project, which is preventing him from directing it. And I had to go all over to find out if this was still happening, because the last mention I found of it was from like 2011. But I did find an interview from September 2013 of him saying it was still going forward and they were in production or something like that. So...
I remember hearing that because people were asking me if I was going to be involved in it, and I'm like, why would I be involved in it? I have no idea.
It was not attached to our movie whatsoever.
Well, yeah. But I'm also curious why do a remake? I don't think it was a big hit when it came out, was it?
No, it looked like the box office gross was, I mean, I guess when it came out, it was like number 9 at the box office when it opened. But it was made for like between 700,000 and $1 million. It only made like 5 or 6 million total, which I mean, percentage-wise isn't bad, but it's not a big chunk of money.
To be honest, that's the kind of film that you would have rented anyway over going to see in the theaters.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely
a horror rental. Like, you grab five videos for the price of three at your local video store,
that's how I saw it, yeah. Five movies for 5 days for $5 at Ormsby's, man.
I remember and those days.
And I think that's, it's like Eddie and the Cruisers. It was not a box office smash, but it became a hit because of VHS.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of, and then, of course, over the years, became its own cult classic, only to be, of course, outweighed by the cult status of the unrelated sequel, Troll 2. Of course,
objection, pandering to the judge.
One of my favorite movies.
Overruled.
Great. All right, pandering to the judge is absolutely allowed from here on.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, and encouraged.
Okay, good. There's let's see here. Okay, we talked about Moriarty and his character. He really didn't get a lot of play in this movie. He was kind of like just a doofus, just like, okay, every once in a while, popped in and out. But I love the obligatory 1980s dance scene for no apparent reason, where he just dances to Summertime Blues. I remember that scene from when I was a kid. I was waiting for it again when I was watching it. Now, it was absolutely unnecessary if you watch it. There was no reason for that. I'm wondering,
I would like to say it humanized the characters and made you like them more, but these were characters that were never in any mortal danger. The parents in this movie were oblivious.
They didn't know
everything.
Anything.
Yeah, they were like clueless.
Until like tentacles of like ferns were coming out of the top of the house. They were like, where's our kids? I don't know, playing with trolls or something.
They barely saw that. They opened their front door of their apartment several times. Yeah. And like the world kept changing. But
they're just like, peeked out. They're not out here, so they're probably safe. Creak.
Yeah. No, it was the cops who saw the vines coming out of the roof of the house at the end. And I love how when the vines disappeared, their justification for it, they're like, I guess there was a stereo that was too loud in this neighborhood.
Yeah, it was probably a stereo.
Yeah. It's like, how did that visual thing you just saw translate to something you might have heard?
Wasp. Well, yeah. Wasp showed up.
Wasp showed up.
Did a roof concert.
Off to the donut shop. Too bad we couldn't get Ernie Hudson to do this, but.
It was classic. I mean, they had a lot of those classic tropes from the 80s movies I really liked, but that was one of them. And I was wondering, it served no cinematic purpose, so I was wondering why it stayed in. I think every 80s movie had to have
an obligatory dance scene.
Yeah. Actually, Troll 2 had one, if you recall. The more of a workout scene, right?
Like Connie,
Oh my god, I love that.
Her intense workout.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holly dance. Yeah.
Classic. There's some more pandering for you, but you can't.
Excellent. I'll allow it. Hear.
Very good.
Is that a judge thing to say? Here. I don't think that's a judge thing to say.
It can be.
All right.
I'll allow it.
Yeah. We'll allow it. Yeah.
All right.
I was also a big fan of I feel like is something that goes into fantasy movies and stuff, is the Henson-esque troll sing along randomly. They're just like, we are trolls and doodly do do doodly do, mm-hmm. And then she blows like a horn.
Yep.
And nobody else in the apartment hears the really loud horn, but the trolls do, and they back off.
Well, us hearing the horn was just for effect. I'm guessing it's more like a dog whistle.
Okay, like low pitch.
Yeah, it was like, something that they could only hear. Yeah,
because
that's my guess.
It had a pretty hefty tone to it. Gotta love the Henson-esque troll sing along. Reminded me of something you see out of like The Labyrinth or something like
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Casio synthie soundtrack. It is a very much an 80s movie,
which is why I don't quite get.
And that would probably be like a rap or something, or some dubstep. Or
let me tell you about all these trolls today, dude. Yeah, that would actually be 92 or something.
Yeah.
Well, in the 80s, every hit song had to have a rap breakdown in the middle of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. A bridge of it.
A bridge. It had to have a rap bridge. Paul Abdul did a single. Had to have a rap breakdown in it, and so it hits all of those marks. And this, it came out a full year after Back to the Future, obviously one of the best representations of 80s cinema ever.
Which holds up very well, by the way.
That's still fun, doesn't it?
Yeah. I rewatched it like about 2 months ago.
It's just great fun to watch, and he's Zemeckis is one of my favorite directors, but I digress.
All right, Jeremiah.
Okay, I believe we've been we're up to our time limit for discussion about this film. So is it time to shift gears and talk about Smiley now?
Yes, I would love to, actually.
I'm the judge, but I put everything in the form of a question because I don't know what I'm doing.
That's such a judge thing to say. Your Honor, you're very confused, Honor. I do have to approach the bench.
I've never been accused of being very authoritive, so we're
all
just
right.
Gonna
well,
go.
Yeah, I would love to take the floor if you would so give me the right to.
You have the floor.
All right. My movie is about internet trolls, and as before said, is the film Smiley from the year 2012. This very recent film has an IMDb score of 3.6.
Out of 10.
Out of 10. And a Rotten Tomato score of 18% out of 19%.
Sorry, buddy. Sorry, I'm afraid that's out of 100.
It's out of 100.
I don't think you do percent out of 19%.
No, this movie
is... And specifically, this movie was selected for this particular case because...
Because I was wanting to take the idea of trolls and turn it on its head. Troll has two meanings in this modern day and age. First of all, the horror troll, which Jeremiah has bumbled his way through describing, and we'll see if this turns out to work in his favor.
Cleverly bumbled, I might add.
This might have been a very interesting strategy on his part, but we'll see.
Yep.
And for my side, I'd like to bring into light the idea of the other kind of troll. And in this modern age, we do have a new menace. On the internet, we have trolls, and these are people who work hard every day to make everyone's lives horrible. Sometimes catastrophically, and in this movie, sometimes deadly. So, this movie was directed by Michael J. Gallagher, and had three writers, which disappointed me a little bit. But it was Edward Cooperstein, M.J. Gallagher, and Glasgow Phillips. Out of those three, the only one of note is actually Glasgow Phillips, who is a writer for South Park. He did 15 episodes and produced a show that I actually found quite fun, but it didn't really catch on with the mainstream, called Code Monkeys. It was an 8-bit show from a
I
few
love
years
that show.
Back.
Absolutely
yeah.
love that show.
Yeah, it was about computer programmers working in the video game industry in the 80s and was entirely animated in 8-bit, so it looked really beautiful.
The E.T. episode.
What the yes. fuck's an et?
Yeah. I love the E.T. episode yeah. of the terrible Atari E.T. games. He didn't see yeah. the movie, so he had no idea. He was like, I'm just going to go in a pit and pick up a berry.
Yeah, it explained why the actual E.T. game from the 80s for Atari was so horrible. Yeah. And they're like, we have all this money to go research the movie. Let's go to the strip club instead.
I think they found recently it's the land... in New Mexico or something where
it's
they were
full
all dumb.
Of them yeah.
they actually recently found that like a year ago they actually finally uncovered the site and they dug it up and they found yeah. all the old cartridges.
Thousands of E.T. cartridges.
Hundreds of thousands yeah yeah continue sorry
it's okay it's a great aside yeah. I will allow it. I know, I'm playing judge for some reason.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm the one that will do the allowing around
yeah.
here. Hang
Objection. Scott can't play judge.
All right. we're going to talk about the cast for a quick moment. The lead in this movie, her name is Ashley. The actress's name is Caitlin Gerard. She was actually in a few movies that were of note. She was in Magic Mike and The Social Network. I had to write in my notes typecast. Next to The Social Network being two movies about the internet. And
oh, I was wondering where the... Because I was trying to find a link. I've never seen Magic Mike, but I know what it's about, between Magic Mike and Social Network. Or yeah, Magic Mike and Smiley. Those did not...
There was
okay.
no typecasting between those
oh,
two.
Oh, okay. So it makes sense now.
Yeah, the secondary actress in the movie, her name is Proxy in the film. Shoot, you know what? I did not even write her real name down. Jared, do you have IMDb open?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, she's...
I can find out.
The reason why I didn't write down her name is I got excited that she's actually a modern-day scream queen, if you will. She's been in movies like Painkiller Jane and The Den, both notable modern horror movies.
Is it Melanie Pap... the brunette, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she played Proxy.
Melanie Papalia.
Okay.
Thank you. That's probably why I didn't
yeah,
write it.
Lovely young lady from British Columbia.
Okay. Yes, exactly. Yeah, she's actually yeah. a notable scream queen of the modern age. She hasn't done a ton of films, but everything she's done has more or less been horror-oriented. Mm-hmm. Once again, maybe she's in the typecasting role, but she does well. I actually liked her in this film.
Yeah.
And she's in American Pie, Book of Love.
I saw that. Yeah, that was the one set-aside one, which probably just speaks to her being a young female.
Yeah,
you know?
The teen, mm-hmm. sexy teen.
Yeah,
kind
she
of thing.
Just fits yes. that role.
Yep.
What I loved is in a very small role in this film is Keith David. He played Officer Diamond, and he's only in like one or two scenes in the entire movie. But his IMDb is huge. He was in Platoon, Pitch Black, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Cloud Atlas. He was on a couple episodes of Community and The Chronicles of Riddick and Requiem for a Dream. I was very, very impressed to see this this body of work from someone who had maybe all of two or three scenes in this entire movie.
Amazing scenes, though.
He's sort of the Raymond Burr character. When they first made Godzilla, the old black and white one, they hired Raymond Burr to just come into a room, and you know they wrote it so that he could do everything in one day or 2 days and just sit in this set and do his lines. And then they could say to the American audiences, Godzilla featuring Raymond Burr.
Exactly, a name.
So,
yep.
Yeah, so he's, I think he's kind of the Raymond Burr character. They did the same thing with Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting. It's a fairly common practice to do that, to write a few scenes that only take place in one, you know, in one set, so that you can have an actor of some note give the film some weight, and it only takes them a day or two to film so they can fit it into their schedules, and it helps their, I guess their star quality by saying, yeah, this guy's in the film.
Definitely.
Yeah. That makes sense. Why he's like in this one scene with like the same two or three actors the entire time. Cause you can do that like with the B team over here any time of the year to kind of to record those scenes.
Yeah. They do the same thing in this movie with the teacher in the classroom. The actor's name is Roger Bart. And he's actually been in 52 films.
Yeah, he's a pretty noted character actor.
Yeah, I recognized him immediately, and I had to go IMDb him, and he was in like Harold and Kumar,
I've seen him too.
Midnight Meat Train. He was on How I Met Your Mother. I was just very impressed by his entire role of movies, even though he's someone when you see his face, you're like, oh, who is that? I recognize him.
Well, especially going into this
he's
movie,
a that guy.
When you get the you know people like that have been you know in some of these bigger movies and stuff. Mainly because of the way this movie was produced, it was kind of this YouTube guy for the most part with his YouTube friends who were like, we're going to essentially independently produce a movie. And he was, Gallagher, I think, with one of the main guy, was essentially doing everything. He right down to trying to get the MPAA approval. And he, you know, eventually got like picked up by AMC and they kind of, you know, brought them into their, you know, or distributed it for like independent purposes, and you could go onto a website and request screenings for your hometown and stuff like that. So it's interesting that he still chose to keep all the like his friends and stuff in the movie, and was still able to like get these like larger actors and stuff. So
the one thing that stood out in my mind when I was watching it is usually for low budget horror films, the acting is. And I'm the last person to criticize anybody about their bad acting, but I will cop to that right off the bat. But I was impressed with the acting. These were some young actors that I was impressed. I think they didn't necessarily have a lot to work with script wise, but a lot of times in low budget horror films, they will, you know, cast, oh, let's just say, not very good actors, but I thought most of them were pretty strong. I thought they were pretty good performances.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
Yeah, and with that being said, too, it's I mean most of the reviews that I read about this, they were kind of scathing, negative, and almost in every review, the only positive thing most had to say were like the performances of some of the actors. You know, Caitlin, the lead. A teacher, people like that. So
now I'm actually I'm doing a bad job here defending my case. I haven't even actually I've been bearing the lead. We haven't actually described what this movie's about besides internet trolls.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well then, you have the floor. Is that what a judge says? I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
That's what you say.
I'm
the judge.
That's what Judge Hewitt says.
So essentially, this movie is like a modern day retelling of the old Bloody Mary legend, or even the more recent movie Candyman. It follows the idea that you can chant something multiple times and then get a reaction from it being something horrific. In this movie, if you go on to a like a chat roulette style. Or Omegle style randomized browser.
It was called
online.
Hide and Go Chat in this
movie. Chat in this movie. Yeah. You can get someone on there, and if you picture in your mind them dying and then type, I did it for the lulz, three times on your keyboard and send it, the killer Smiley will appear behind them and slit their throat or stab them or anything like that.
Smiley. Now, what's this Smiley all about?
Smiley is a internet-created killer who essentially wears a all-skin mask with the eyes and mouth like sewn shut. Okay. And he will just appear, silently kill you, and then apparently terrorize you past that if you're the person who typed it.
Because they can see you in the webcam, or he can.
Yeah, he can see you back from the webcam, and he's like, oh, you're next.
Yeah, I'm going to get you.
But he has no mouth, so he can't say it. He's silent. He's a silent killer.
Yeah, he pantomimes.
And the mask is really cool looking, I think.
I think so, too.
It was a very cool effect. And if you notice in the movie, there were two separate types
of masks. There's the stitched shot one, and then there's more of like the drawn-on, like, I don't know what you call it.
Yeah, the stitch shot one actually looked like it melded with the flesh on his neck. Like, it looked less like a mask.
It looked like
more
it was
like
somebody.
Well,
and part of the urban legend that they tell, I think at the very beginning, is, or I can't remember, one of them tells the story of they actually like sewed the person's eyes shut and then carved like the smile into their face.
Yeah,
so it's actually that's more like a deformity. And then there are people, you know, there's the Smiley in the film that's more of like a mask to represent that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the movie centers around Ashley and her friend Proxy. I think Proxy's hilarious as a name. It's such a computer-centric style name.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do this. They decide to finally, you know, do the Smiley chant, which is just typing it to a keyboard.
Yeah.
And they kill someone through it.
Yeah, because they've witnessed it and they're like, is this real? Is it not real? No, there's only one way to find out. If we do it and it happens, it has to be real because it can't be, you know.
Yeah, when they witness it, it's at that party they're at with the 4chan douchebags.
Yeah, the bee where the random board
Zane
party.
And Pedo Bear.
The anonymous party. Yeah.
Basically, they're all anonymous members, and they do it on their computer, which actually harkens back to the opening scene before the title even comes up, where you see the girl with her younger sister, and then she has it done to her, and she dies. They kill her in the later scene. That actually harkens back to that first
right.
moment.
Yeah.
And, that freaks them out, and they go home, and they decide to do it themselves. And then through the rest of the movie, Ashley essentially alternates between going to class and going home and being terrified by Smiley, who saw her on the webcam and now apparently has it out for her.
Sort of like stalks her, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of amazing the jump scares in this movie that turn out to be nothing, which I felt was poorly used. I don't know if you notice as you go through this movie, but there are, I think, upwards of 10 random jump scares that don't result in anything horrific happening.
It's like the guy with like a drinking a beer, looking like he's at the end of a tunnel. Like oh, is that Smiley? He's like, nope, drinking a beer. No,
just a dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in the 80s, it was always a cat being thrown off camera by a grip. So
those
it's like
poor 80s cats.
Before the Humane Society got involved.
Like it was just hanging there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it every time.
We always called it a cat scare, but a jump scare. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right, yeah. They just took the cat scare, and they're like, wait a minute, we can do this with other things? Yeah. And then it became the jump scare.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, the scene you were mentioning was the one in the alley with the guy drinking the beer. That's the first jump scare. And then she runs home scared because she's being chased by Smiley.
Right.
But then she wakes up in bed, and that's kind of like a jump scare when she jumps up because it was all a dream.
Right.
But then it's all a dream again because she's still within a dream and Smiley's like over her and leering and dripping blood in her face. And then she jump scares again to being awake from the dream a second time and breaks her friend's nose.
That's right. Yep.
And I just love the repetition of that scene. It's like as many jump scares as you can cram into a minute and a half of film.
It was a challenge, like, thrown out to him. Yeah.
The editor must have been having a hard time. He's like, really? How much tighter do we need to get this?
Oh, geez, all right. Yeah. Going back to some of the way the movie was made and everything like that, I kind of found something. You mentioned the typing in the do it for the lulz or whatever in that scene. And I know, you know, going back and forth in the movie and everything here, going back to that scene where the babysitter or the sister, I think both, whatever.
At the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. When she goes home and actually does it, and this is just one of those little quirks I picked up in the movie of, I think you'll go into a couple other little fun trivia quirks of problems with the movie or inconsistencies or something. Something that I was confused about is, she's typing it on the screen and it says, you know, you, stranger, or whatever, mm-hmm. which I think it's interesting that on Hide and Go Chat, the other person just called stranger. Not
yeah.
like.
That actually makes it creepier.
It's like, immediately, I would not use stranger, like, stranger Hide and Go Chat. You'd be like, oh, that's just creepy immediately. But there's, it looks like there's an inconsistency because it types, looks at, like, when it zooms in, it says you, I did it for the lulz, did it for the lulz, did it for the lulz. as if it's zooming on his screen, but it doesn't really make sense, you know, cinematically. Why
yeah,
would
I noticed
do that.
That too. There's
and then
a bunch
when it pans back, it's like stranger. So at first, I thought when I first saw it, I was like, "Oh, she has to type it in." But how does he have, you know, if you type it in for yourself, why do you get killed? And of course, it panned back. It was just one of those little quirks of the movie to kind of point out some of its interesting.
Yeah,
flaws.
There was another one of those later on that I thought was hilarious. It's when she goes to the police station and talks to Officer Diamond.
Oh yeah.
When Diamond calls over his partner Coop.
Coop.
Yeah. Which also, by the way, would make a great 80s cop show. Diamond and Coop.
Yeah, Diamond and Coop.
Diamond and Coop. In color. A Stephen J. Canal production.
But yeah, when Diamond tells Coop to bring over the computer because they're trying to disprove her belief in Smiley, they're like, "Oh, you're the girl that freaked out in class today and smashed your computer because she's stressed out." They pull up YouTube and show her that there's already been like a million hits for her video of her freaking out, which is why they can't believe her. But if you look really carefully at the laptop they bring out, it's a YouTube user screen for you managing and developing the video you're posting.
Yeah.
So the only way they would have that screen open to show her is if those two cops posted that video of her.
Yeah, or had like, access somehow
to the developer page.
The poster's account, like, yeah, actually posting to it.
So I'm thinking the cops, they posted the video to discredit her
Diamond,
in case she came in.
In Diamond and Coop the show, that should be part of it. It should be like the whole
thing. Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Coop's running around with an iPhone taking videos of things, and Diamond's posting them online, and they use them to disprove cases.
Well, I like that like, Diamond doesn't...
Diamond,
like,
you're out of control!
Coop!
He won't believe anything either. Like, in Diamond and Coop, he can carry that on. He doesn't believe anything, no matter who goes to him with anything. Somebody could murdering somebody in front of you, like, "Well, I don't believe you crazy girl."
And
you
he disproves it all using YouTube clips.
Yeah.
There's no way you could have...
We wrecked 30 cop cars!
That murder could never have happened because this cute kitten video was happening at the same time.
Oh, Diamond.
He's playing chopsticks with chopsticks.
Skeptical Diamond.
We hardly knew ye.
I gotta say, and also when that scene rounds out and they finally tell her to go away, essentially... they're like, "You need to see a psychiatrist." And she screams back, "I am seeing a psychiatrist."
Yeah.
And I just think that's like one of the worst back and forth I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's like the worst version of, "You want the truth? You can't handle the truth." Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I tell you, and this is where I get really reluctant is in criticizing other people's movies, because I know I'm in the worst movie in the world. But it is difficult for an actor. You know, if the dialogue is clunky and if it's not working, it's very difficult to pull that stuff off convincingly. It's kind of like when you're asked to laugh or to be enjoying some music or something. If it's not there, and you know, they had, I guess, three writers, which means it went through a lot of rewrites, and I just found the script to be kind of thin. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't have been, because I thought it was a pretty good premise, but there were so many times when the dialogue was so stiff and so seemingly written by three completely different people that it didn't connect in a lot of places. It just kind of didn't make the connections that it was trying to make.
I agree with that. Like, if you listen to any of the monologues by the teacher while he's being uber depressing in all of his, like, four or five scenes, talking about, like, humanity sucking and the world being horrible, and he's a real downer, and those lines are actually pretty well delivered and written. But then any of the moments where you have the main lead, Ashley, and her pseudo-boyfriend, Pedo Bear, there... Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, I called him Pedo Bear because that's what they called him at the beginning of the film.
Yeah,
halfway through they
nickname.
Yeah, they called him Binder later, and I just thought that was such a bad name, so I just went back to calling him Pedo Bear.
Yeah, yeah, and I think
Binder.
There was a story of him being called Pedo Bear because on 4chan, no matter what people post, you're not supposed to report it because it's supposed to be about anonymity and blah blah blah. And he apparently reported some child pornography.
Some anonymous members.
Yeah. for that, and that's where the Pedo Bear. I actually researched what the heck Pedo Bear was because of that.
Yeah, and that was never explained. And the teacher doing those monologues were almost, it felt like filler in a lot of them, where it's like, okay, but you know, cut this with a montage of something actually scary happening, because
like you said earlier, they brought him in because of his name, and those were scenes he could film practically by himself with a bunch of extras.
But it would have been fun if he had been a part. Like the way they filmed those too, is it led it up to me like thinking he was a big part of it, or he was Smile or something. And it was just like, no, that was that. It became filler material.
They do that all the way down to his last scene. In fact, when you the very last scene he has in the movie is when she's freaking out and she goes to talk to him in his office to get personal counsel, private counsel. And he has that really weird moment where he's like, can you keep a secret? Right. And she looks at him all nervous. Yeah. And then he opens up his cabinet. And he goes, I keep whiskey in my cabinet.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, this is kind of lighthearted and weird. And then when they finish that discussion, it ends with her and him having that one moment where he's like, you did it for the lulz. And he has like this knowledge that he technically shouldn't even have. And it made no sense because in the end of the movie, he's not associated with the killers.
I expected it to be kind of like the
I thought
the
he
leader.
Might have been the killer. Yeah.
Or yeah. His... yeah. He might as well have been hanging out with Diamond over there on the police station.
Yeah. Seriously. And I feel like, and then I remember it was really creepy because at the end of that, he's like, well, you know my take on it. I just don't care. Like, that was like, I was like, wait a minute. And then, of course, after everything's done, I'm like, oh, he just didn't care. Yeah,
it was meaningless.
That was him actually just saying, I don't care. I thought he was like being like, I don't care about anything because I'm Smiley or something. But no, he was just like, fuck it. I don't care. That's it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I thought, a really clever idea. And they keep trying to make cyber thrillers, which has become kind of an oxymoron because they usually aren't very thrilling. And this was one that I thought, you know, the premise was really good, where if you want to take a similar example, what they did with the original Nightmare on Elm Street, the only Elm Street movie that I really liked was the original one.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some really weak acting in that, but it's the idea of, you know, this person who haunts you in your dreams and coming to life was a very good horror concept. And I thought conceptually Smiley had a really good concept behind it. It just wasn't, it never picked up enough momentum for it to be actually scary and compelling. And I think the character Smiley could be a very good franchise kind of spinoff character, but there wasn't anything for he or any of the actors to do.
Yeah. I mean, you could almost say that kind of troll isn't very menacing, or maybe not even that relevant compared to, say, like a 1986 troll. You know, from a fairy tale.
Objection. badgering me.
Well, but you know, the 86 troll also is played more for laughs and not for scares. And I think the idea of an internet troll is very frightening. I mean, it is a horror movie, so conceptually that could have been something like Saw or Nightmare on Elm Street. It could have been scary, and I'm not one of these people who thinks that gore or violence adds up to scares, but in Smiley, I even felt like it was missing some of that. It was missing some of the, you know, the horror of someone being stabbed. It was...
True. Overall, it had very few deaths. And then when you actually round it out to the very last scene, you find out that none of those deaths were real. And the only one that was someone who accidentally killed themselves by jumping out of a window.
Well, and actually, if you watch all the way through the credits, she's alive.
Oh, is there an after credit scene?
There's right after the credits, she eyes open, gasps to life. So she's not even dead.
But what I did like is during that whole talk about Anonymous, where they all take off their masks and you find out that it's actually all the characters in the movie just trying to fuck with this one character.
Yeah, except, of course, for the one you maybe thought was part of it, which was the teacher. But
exactly.
Not him,
he's the only one.
But including Pedo Bear Binder, who was sort of a boyfriend-y kind of character.
But I do like that at that last point, when they pull off their masks and they kind of explain why they were doing it, they do actually refer to themselves as trolls. And they associate themselves as an offshoot of Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. And fringe group, yeah.
Yeah, and how Anonymous may not totally like their actions, but, you know, this is what they're doing. And then they talk about how popular this is going to be during Halloween, and it almost opens up as a sequel-building storytelling device when they start saying, we're going to bring all these boxes of Smiley masks and drop them at different college campuses and leave them there. So when these Smiley videos start going viral, they're going to spawn this new generation of internet-based serial
viral killers,
copycats.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of brilliant as an ending. Like, it really opens it up for a variety of sequels.
Yeah, well, yeah, but by the time they were to that point, and it is a twist ending. And by the way, we do tell people that there are spoilers in this.
The top of the show. At this point, I guess it's too late if anyone forgot or stepped in 5 minutes.
we're going to ruin everything for you guys. Sorry. Come on in.
But by the time they did the twist ending, I just didn't give a shit anymore.
Right.
I just was just like, whatever. Okay, fine. It was just the film was bloodless, and I thought the script was bloodless.
Well, it feels like they were almost trying to set it up like the Saw movies do, where they're like, oh, okay, if we set up a franchise, a horror franchise, right. Mm-hmm. Where you don't need, like, the character unbelievably like Jason Voorhees, or, I mean, Freddy Krueger's a little different, but you know, over and over.
They did do that with the double ending, because it did say we want to spread this virally to college campuses and make other people don the Smiley mask.
Oh, no.
But at the last scene, Smiley appears in the computer and kills Proxy.
Right.
And it's real, and the kid freaks out, but my theory is it's a teacher.
So they kind of duplicated
the one
it.
Does that.
I feel like for franchise purposes, they were kind of saying like, oh, this way, kind of like with the Saw franchise, you don't need this. They can have like, or even Human Centipede franchise. You can have these different, not copycats, but like,
meta.
I guess more Human Centipede was more meta, but the, you know, the Saw ones were like, oh, you're being trained by so-and-so to, you know, be the new serial killer. You can have these new viral serial killers go to different campuses, things like that. But they did, and actually bring up a good point here, because the real Smiley is the one with like the carved, the stitched face and everything, and you can tell the 4chan Smileys are in the, you know, or anonymous Smileys are the ones with the masks. When she actually starts seeing Smiley, she's chased by the one with the stitched face. So is she really encountering the real Smiley?
I think throughout the whole movie there was a real Smiley, and it at points was attacking and harassing her.
Yeah,
but it never really did anything. It was basically a bad nightmare. It never had a good effect. Like, if it wanted to kill her, why didn't it?
Because she never saw the real Smiley's face. She only saw like the masked one. But in her, when she was being chased by Smiley, it was the one with the stitched one, like the real one that you see at the end.
Yeah, so, the Freddy Krueger.
It's almost like she had an encounter with the real Smiley, even though it was revealed to her at the end that the real Smiley wasn't real and it was all these people, you know, messing with her. I also was, when researching this, Brad, it wasn't completely determined if this was for trying to make it more to get like attention or anything like that from Gallagher. But he said after he was posting about this movie and after he was making it, producing it, that 4chan and Anonymous like had sent him some stuff, you know, and posted his personal information online to harass him and also put out this whole, like, fuck off Smiley campaign or something to try to downvote the movie and make it, like, I'm wondering if that
if
was maybe...
low ratings are partly due to other internet trolls.
But I read
how deadly they are, Jeremiah.
No, but...
Oh, my.
Oh, boy.
Not only are they affecting characters in this film, but in real life, they're affecting the film.
Okay, here's the thing, though. I read all the Rotten Tomatoes negative ratings, and all of them were pretty much just spot on exactly the ratings that we gave it.
An internet troll would say.
Wait a minute, are you one of them? Yeah.
Well, actually, I think that wraps up my point on the case. I don't think there's anything more I can say in defense of internet trolls. I feel like I've stated my case pretty succinctly, and I feel pretty confident about this. So,
I forgive
anyone's misgivings about this film and their poor judgment in not liking it.
Well, do you really feel that way? Well,
and I cede the floor.
Yeah.
As the judge, I'm going to need some time in chambers to think this over, and I will be back in a moment with my ruling. If there are no further arguments.
None from me.
All right.
Which troll has the edge? Will Judge Ewing find for the classic trolls of old in 1986's Troll? Or will the internet trolls of 2012's Smiley emerge victorious?
Gentlemen, you both made very compelling cases, very good arguments on both sides. On one hand, the 80s troll, which was played up for laughs as well as for scares, demonstrates the typical troll hiding under the bridge, hiding under your bed, something that is certainly worthy of being frightened of. And Scott, your argument about an internet troll, an all-too-real troll that really can be a horrifying situation for somebody is also a very compelling argument. And I've been in chambers and I've been deliberating back and forth. And before I tell you my ruling, I just want to thank you two gentlemen for having me on this first Horror in the Court. There will be others. But for now, I am going to rule in favor of Jeremiah. And here is why. The troll from the 80s, because it was played partially for laughs, it lent to its frightening appeal. For some reason, that troll is a more viscerally frightening troll than the troll in Smiley, precisely because Smiley was, it took itself so dead seriously, I think it could have used a sense of humor, kind of like a Freddy Krueger or something, and I think that would have made it a more frightening troll. So I rule in favor of Jeremiah Johnson.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that decision. Thank you. And Jeremiah, congratulations.
All right.
Well played. Well played, good sir.
Now you guys aren't going to be like, you know, beating each other up out in the parking lot or anything like that.
We're going to, our battleground is court, and we will take it next time around.
So. Exactly. We have another month to work before we record again. And I think next time when I bring my case to the court, I'm just going to work twice as hard to win.
That's right.
Okay.
Right. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, gentlemen. Until next time.
This concludes the case of Troll v. Smiley. Come back next month where Judge Ewing will be hearing the case of Ravenous v. Feast, a showdown of people eaters on the next Horror in the Court.